co-host, John Stern. What's up, John?
Not too much. How's it going?
Good. It's not ninth place at the Grand Prix. I have literally had people message me. They're like, so are your co-hosts just going to do well at every event now that they've joined the podcast? And I was like, I don't know. I hope so. This sounds great for them.
Yeah, I mean, I finally do okay on a weekend, and Seth just takes off. He's not even here, so I can't rub it in.
Like, literally every week he just goes somewhere else. You know, yeah. He's like, oh, I can't let John, like, do well. And hopefully, you know, he does well this weekend. So, nothing. So, do you root for America when Canada's out? Like, how does your rooting interests go typically?
For the World Magic Cup specifically?
Yeah.
I root for my friends. Like, I have friends on like a bunch of teams, so like I would like Seth to do well for sure. Yeah, I mean, it's Canada and friends, I would say.
Canada and friends.
More so than any specific country.
Yeah. But is there the Canadian pride? Is that a thing for you?
Yeah, I mean, we haven't done particularly well in the past like 5-6 years that I've been, you know, invested in the World Magic Cup, so it's been disappointing. It was just really disappointing when I was on the team and we didn't do well. You know, you sort of feel like you're one of the best countries, but you know, you have to show it, and we weren't able to show it. So definitely hope they do well this year.
Well, you know who else hopes that Seth does well is our sponsor, Oasis Games. You can check them out at mtgoasis.com. They also probably hope that Canada does well for what it's worth. You can use the code CCMTG at checkout to get 14% or 15% off of your first order. Use the code WithBeGood to get 4% off of every order. You can support the podcast directly by going to patreon.com/CCMTG. You know, I just want to give a special shout out. We've had a couple of listeners over the last couple of weeks who have edited their pledge. So they went in and, you know, we used to have all these benefits for $5. And we grandfathered those people into the same benefits that they would have had, but they still went in and they updated to $12, which is what it would cost now. And it kind of means a lot. It's, you know, they sent me messages just saying the show's going really well. You guys are crushing it. I just want to contribute more and just say thank you. And those meant a lot to me. So I just want to thank those listeners. You can also support the rest of the network going to constructivecriticism.com, checking out what else is going on. We got Even Odds, which I did yesterday with Mason Clark, helping out with Tragon. We got Adam Spain doing you know, a podcast, Homeward Path, Common Knowledge. There's so much going on over there. Just go ahead, constructivecriticism.com, and check it out. If you want to join the conversation, you can join the Discord. We have a contest going on in the Discord right now. If you post a deck list as well as a screenshot of a 4-1 or better on MTGO or Arena, you know, whoever gets the most, we're going to give a swag back to, and then we'll do some random other drawings for some CCMTG swag. So check that out over in the Discord, which you can find a link to in the show notes. Let's get right into it, though, John. This week we're going to talk about mostly you this week, because it was as you battled with a deck that you spent a lot of time and did a lot of work on. Let's go into hashtag always improving. Hashtag always improving is the point of the show. We believe if you're not getting better, you're getting worse. We wanted to be doing what we can all the time to improve ourselves. This week, I played quite a bit of Magic, and I played a deck that was kind of newer. I played the Dragons deck, or the Dragon Drake deck, the Phoenixless Blue-Red deck in Standard. Played quite a bit with that deck, and really learned a lot in playing what is a control deck with very little removal. I don't know if you've gotten the chance to play that deck a lot, John, but it is very interesting and different than other control decks that you might have tried.
No, I haven't tried. It's in Standard. I haven't played any Standard in the past 2 weeks. So
yeah, I think it won the Invitational. It's not the list that I've been playing, but it was interesting to play a deck that it certainly plays a control game, but can also just kind of went out of nowhere. Just a value grinding deck that's different than the decks I've been playing the last couple of years. You know, playing a lot of blue-white control, playing a lot of mid-range decks, just kind of there's a lot to learn from it, and I'm excited to kind of do a video on it in the future. But what about you? What have you done to improve at Magic this week?
Well, I think mostly what I've done is sort of identify some areas for improvement. Specifically, I had a situation at the GP that I feel like I did not handle very well and probably ended up costing me.
Tell us about
So in round 9, so the first round of day 2, I was playing against Tomoharu Saito. And I played him before, and I've seen him play before. And he has some habits that personally, I do not think are on the level. I've brought it up to head judges. They've not done anything. But specifically, after game one, so first of all, he's a slow player. He often plays a deck that can take advantage of the clock in game three, where he can be in a position where he can win, but he can't really lose. That's not so much the case in this matchup, because he was playing Bant Spirits and I was playing Arclight Phoenix. So both of those decks are capable of winning quickly.
Sure.
But anyway, he's playing slowly. And after game one, the way he shuffles, he spent at least in our match, and I've seen him do it in other matches, he spent 4 minutes, I wrote down the time of a clock, doing what looks like sideboarding, but what he's really doing is face up mana weaving his deck. So he's just like, you know, looking through it, moving cards around, making sure there's no clumps. And then after that, so he does that for 4 minutes. And at this point, I've sideboarded, shuffled, and presented my deck. After that, he starts shuffling, and he does some mass shuffles and then a pile of five. And he does enough shuffling that it qualifies as he's randomizing his deck. However, I don't believe that he's randomizing it enough to put back in the chance of getting clumps. And he's also just eating a ton of time off the clock. And I feel that he wouldn't be doing this face-up mana weaving if he didn't feel it gave him an advantage. Uh-huh. And whether it's both a clock advantage and a distribution advantage. And because I feel that there's that intent of getting an advantage by doing it, that it's cheating. Now, other people may feel differently. The rules say as long as you sufficiently randomize, it doesn't matter what you did before, which is why the judges have not done anything. So anyway, I handled this kind of poorly because he continued to play slow. And Banned Spirits is a deck that can represent a lot at basically every point in the game. He can represent stuff on my turn, his turn. And every turn, there's no one turn where he's thinking for 3 minutes. So, I mean, and there was a judge for half the match standing behind us because we were in the feature match area, not a video feature, unfortunately. But every turn is like 20, 30 seconds, his turn, 20, 30 seconds, my turn. And we went to time and we probably played 20 to 25 turns total in a 3-game match. So I need to improve at being diligent at not so much calling for a judge, because I know people say call a judge, but I feel that while you should do that, it doesn't really solve the problem most of the time. But just in sort of pestering and hounding my opponent, I feel that he's taking advantage of the clock in an unfair way. And I need to be constantly pushing him to make a play. Because what ends up happening is during the middle of the match, I'm aware of the situation. So I'm like trying to avoid thinking at all so that we can reach a result. So basically he's thinking his 20 seconds on both our turns and I'm playing at instant speed. And then later on in the match, when it's like really tight, I slow down. And this is what cost me. Like I had a decision basically on as turn before time was called, where I needed to either trade my Phoenix in an attack and hope to draw into a sequence of three spells to bring it back, or draw a burn spell. He's at three life. And I basically spent like 40 seconds deciding, which is too long. Time is called on my turn. I only get turns 2 and 4. And I would have killed him on turn 6 because I was drawing into a Charter Course, which would draw into a Bolt. So I played the end game very poorly.
That's kind of unfair to you. Just from an outside perspective, I don't know Saito. I've never met him. But you know, one of the things that this happens a lot in the PPTQ scene, where you have players who do this, and you're being kind of unfair to yourself to say, I need to shorten my time because this person's playing unfairly. I think that it's pretty reasonable to call a judge, walk away with the judge, and just say, this player has a history of this. We all know that. Like, I need you to pester him so that I can play my best Magic.
Yeah. I don't know. Have you ever tried calling a judge 5 minutes into a round and saying something like that? Because I've done it like 2 or 3 times.
Sure.
And every single time they have failed to do it. Often, the most often response is, I can't just stand here and watch your whole match. There's too much to do. They just flat out tell me, no, they won't do it. Sure. When they do it, they are bored out of their minds. They're not paying attention. They're talking to people who walk by, looking around, seeing if anyone calls a judge. And so I feel like calling a judge, yes, you should do it. but I don't feel it's enough. I feel that you need to be willing to pester your opponent. And it's unfortunate that that's what happens, but that's an always improving thing that I need to do. I need to be able to recognize the situation. And even if, and I'm friendly with Saito, I've been friendly with him. I mean, I'm friendly with most people. And it's hard. It's hard to be like, yeah, I know this person. He's acts nice towards me, but I think he's actually cheating me. Sure. And I think, and you know, I didn't think like, oh, I'm playing Phoenix, he's playing Spirits, that we would ever be in a position to draw. But that draw, and it's round 9, so who knows what happens in the rest of the tournament. But if that draw is a win, I am X2, I am top 8, and I hit gold. And I missed gold by 1 point, and I got this draw. And it's just incredibly frustrating. But beyond the preventing cheating, and always improving for me also is, I need to sort of rehearse the end of, like, the, as you're getting close to going to turns, you need to be able to speed up your thought process.
Sure.
And make decisions, even if they're not the best decisions. Like with that situation, if I traded the Phoenix or if I held the Phoenix back,
it doesn't really
either matter. One, it would have been better than waiting out until time is called.
Sure.
So I just need to recognize the situation and be more practiced in understanding. I want to pass my turn, make sure that it's not hanging on my turn as time is called, because I want the 3 extra turns and not 2 extra turns. And
let's go and talk about this deck then. Let's transition out of this. First of all, I agree with you. I think that I play at blazing fast speeds. I have one unintentional draw lifetime at Grand Prix and Pro Tours. So, you know, this is not something that I struggle with, but I know that lots of our listeners do. And it's really hard in those situations to, I'm just going to say this. It's typically people who are going to take those kind of advantages are going to be really friendly people. So I find it interesting that you talk about how friendly Saito is towards you. I don't know Saito, but I would not be friendly towards him in those moments. I would probably just be like, you are taking too long. You have 3 minutes to sideboard. You started sideboarding at this time. Your sideboard time is over. You need to present your deck or I will call a judge right now.
Yeah. Unfortunately, they got rid of that rule and the 3-minute limit is not there anymore.
Oh, really?
But, well, the rationale is they felt that if we say it's 3 minutes, then people who want to stall are going to take the full 3 minutes every time. So instead, they made it, you have to sideboard in a reasonable time, which is, you know, exploitable.
Well, but, 4 minutes is not reasonable.
Well, it was 4 minutes before he started shuffling.
The same difference at that point.
Yeah.
So.
Anyway, you want to talk about the deck? Let's talk about the deck.
Let's move on. That was really loud. I really apologize to listeners.
No worries.
All right. So we have John Stern, 9th place. Oh, that's you. We have 4 Thing in the Ice, 4 Arclight Phoenix, 4 Bedlam Reveler, 4 Faithless Looting, 4 Lava Spike, 4 Lightning Bolt, 4 Serum Vision, 2 Thought Scour, 4 Charter Course, 4 Metamorphose, and 4 Fiery Temper. We have 1 Bloodstained Mire, 4 Scalding Tarn, 1 Snow-Covered Island, 4 Snow-Covered Mountain, 4 Spire Buff Canal, and 4 Steam Vents. So before we get to the sideboard, and before I read off the rest of this, so typically during this part of the show, we take questions from our patrons, and we did post in our patron group to ask, because we allowed all listeners to ask questions about this deck. And I kind of just want to get the most common question out of the way. You actually already answered it on Twitter. But John, why 2 Thought Scour?
Okay, so yeah, and besides the patron questions, I've been, you know, receiving questions about this deck from a lot of people. It's a new deck. I actually wrote an article for Masterop where I talked about my evolution of the list, basically taking a deck from scratch and, you know, as I iterated on it to get to the point where I played it at a GP. But okay, so to answer first the question about Thought Scours, it seems obvious to people that Thought Scour is an effect you want. You both want 1 mana spells, cantrips, and to put stuff into your graveyard. The reason it's a vulnerable spot in the deck, I guess the hidden reason I would say, is that post sideboard against decks that, there's a lot of decks that basically load up on Rest in Peace or Leyline of the Void, and basically attack your graveyard interaction.
Sure.
You it basically makes Thought Scour just a cycle for one blue mana. If they have Rest in Peace or Leyline in play, which is not where you want to be. But also, you can't really just board out all your Bedlam Revelers every time and all your Thought Scours. You don't have enough things to bring in.
Sure.
And if you board out too many cantrips and you're weakening the mana base of the deck and just the deck's momentum, making sure you draw your threats. So I didn't want to be overly vulnerable to that situation post sideboard. So that was that's not how I decided on exactly two. It was just I originally started on two because the list I was looking at had two. They were playing a different version, but when I was considering playing more because it is a good effect, I was like, well, I'm actually boarding out Thought Scours sometimes, and I really don't want to board out more than two cantrips in a lot of cases. And I don't want to be too weak against the anti-graveyard strategies. So that's I'd say the main reason that it's not obvious looking at the list. However, you can also look at the other spells in the deck, the other cantrips, and I think like Thought Scour is clearly worse than Faithless Looting and Mana Morphos are the best cards in the deck. Serum Visions has a Thought Scour-like effect because you can see three cards, so you can find the Phoenix. And I think that's your best cantrip by a lot. So basically, I think Thought Scour would really be, if you wanted to add a Thought Scour, it would really be competing with a Charter Course, which is a reasonable thing to do. But I felt that playing two and being able to board them out against the anti-graveyard strategies was a reasonable compromise.
Sure. Well, in the sideboard, we do have two Ceremonious Rejection, two Dispel, two Lava Axe, three Surgical Extraction, two Abrade, two Anger of the Gods, and two Blood Moon. So,
Two lightning axe. You said two lava axe. Not quite the same, but close.
I definitely did say Lava Axe. My bad. There, no, you don't want a 5 mana Dillon Fife there, John.
I mean, I want to deal five.
Just not for five. So let's talk really quickly about the deck overall. You did well in this tournament. I know that being 1 point short of gold is tough. I mean that's a dagger for sure. But that being said, this was a great tournament for you. What is this deck that you brought to the table trying to do? This is a new deck. This is not something people have played a ton against yet. What is the blue-red version of Arclight Phoenix doing?
So when I started testing Phoenix decks, it was exactly that. They were Phoenix decks. They're decks trying to bring Arclight Phoenix into play incredibly quickly. The mono red version I started testing had several draws where I would just get it turn two with Mana Morphos into two 1 mana spells, including a Faithless Looting. That's where I started. What the deck became is a Thing in the Ice deck. Thing in the Ice is so good in this deck. It's well enough, like it's a good enough reason for sure to play blue. And basically, I'm just trying to find an early thing in the ice, flip it as soon as possible, put a quick clock on my opponents. I can win before Storm can go off, things like that. And somewhere along the way, bring Arclight Phoenixes into play for free, and then burn people out.
Yeah, I got to play against this deck quite a bit because former co-host Michael Hinderaker was playing it at the SCG in Vegas. And one of the things that I quickly noticed is the fact that Thing in the Ice is bolt-proof is huge game as one of the key ways that people would interact with something so hyperly aggressive, they don't get to do. Is that something that was pretty big for you?
It's something, well, different decks. There's a lot of decks that just don't have really any interaction at all,
Sure.
like Storm or Ad Nauseam or whatever. The decks that can interact with it sometimes had trouble. There are still spells. You can still path it or Fatal Push it. But then you also have this secondary plan of Arclight Phoenix and Burn, and you can dig through your deck quite quickly. And if they're trying to answer your threats on a one for one basis where they're spending mana and you're not, they can get in trouble pretty quickly.
Tell me a little bit about. I know that you. Obviously, you have these Bedlam Revelers here. Talk about those for me really quick. Like, is Bedlam Reveler the truth in this deck over some of the other creatures that you could be playing in, like, the big creature slot?
Well, okay, so my opinion on this card specifically changed a lot at this tournament. I've always really liked Bedlam Reveler as a card. I thought it was great in the Mardu Pyromancer deck. It's just it's so often a two mana draw three with a body. It's however, so when I was testing online, it was also very good. I was playing against a lot of black green decks, Jund, stuff like that. And at some point, like, you do exhaust all your spells, empty your hand, and then refill, and you're refilling with bolts and lava spikes and free phoenixes. That said, in this tournament, Bedlam Reveler was terrible for me. It was so bad. I think in 12 rounds, I cast it one time, drew three lands and lost, and chump blocked a thing in the ice in a mirror. Granted, I was boarding it out a lot because people have really piled on the graveyard hate. And you don't want to draw like an 8-mana 3/4. But I was playing against fast creature decks with interaction like Spirits and decks like Storm. And it's just, I don't know. I think the card is good, but I would reevaluate my position on it after this tournament because I'm boarding it out too frequently. I didn't play against any black green midrange decks. And I think you can't afford to have a card. This is why I also cut Gutshot. You can't afford to have a card that is a dead draw in, you know, 70% of your matches in game one. And to have four of them and have them do nothing so frequently. Like, to be fair, often I'm winning, I just win the game and I have Bedlam Reveler in my hand. So it doesn't matter that I didn't cast it. But the fact that it's not helping me achieve my goal in those games too often, I think that it's spot the deck has to be questioned.
So what are other creatures that you play in that slot?
Well, the creature that most people are playing is Crackling Drake, if you've played the card recently, you kind of know, but like, just so people are aware, it gets around all the graveyard hate. It gets around Rest in Peace and Leyline of the Void because it counts cards that are in your graveyard or in exile. So you play that, you tap it on turn four, it draws a card, first of all. It's hard to kill because it has four toughness. And all of a sudden, like, your next attack is basically lethal. Like, it's the same thing with Thing in the Ace. If you ever hit them with a 7-power Thing in the Ace, like, they're basically dead. I mean, it might take a turn. You might have cast two spells, but unless they're killing you the next turn, I mean, that's enough damage that you'll usually win the game. And same with Crackling Drake. Like, if you're hitting them with a Crackling Drake at any point, they're basically just dead. It does cost four, which is why I didn't really try it. I didn't have time to try it enough before this tournament. I did lose to it in round 14. It's quite good in the mirror. So it's definitely a consideration. You can also play enchantments like, I don't know, maybe Firemind's Foresight or Pyromancer Ascension, or you can just play eight creatures. You don't actually have to have, people have Swift Spear. I think Swift Spear is very bad in the deck. I tried it, I cut it immediately because it's too easy for decks to chump lock that one turn where you're casting all your spells.
Are you Double Tilt, by the way?
That is one of my accounts, yeah.
Okay.
And it used to be a secret account until this moment. No, I'm just kidding. enough people know about it that I just can't use it as a secret account. But yeah, that's...
Okay. I just saw the list and I was like, I'm pretty sure this is the literal list that John sent me, so...
Yeah, I have like a... I had five trophies in the eight leagues I played to test this deck. So they're all up there.
Do you want to talk about Jace really quick then?
Yeah, I can talk about Jace. I tried Jace in one league.
Jace Vern's Prodigy, we should be very clear.
And the card is good. It's a must kill. They need to kill it.
You tried Jace in one league and got a trophy with it?
Yeah, and then dropped
and then
it.
Got it?
Well, I was playing, it had two Jace. But I did cast Jace a few times in that tournament, so I got a feel for it. It's a must kill. Often, if it doesn't die, it loots, and then they're dead. It's like flipping it and casting spells, just like, it's overkill.
Sure.
So for that reason, I kind of feel it's just like as good as Charter Course. Like, it's basically one loot, doesn't attack for damage.
Sure.
Once in a while, like if you flash back a spell, but it's also vulnerable to the same kind of graveyard hate. I mean, you still get the loot, and that's what happened. Like, I played it post-sideboard, and I looted twice, and they were dead. It's okay. It's just okay. I mean, okay. I think the deck that did make top eight, Richard Tan, I think he played one. We were talking about the deck after our match, and he's like, yeah, Jace was whatever. It's okay. And you can put one in your deck. It's fine.
Okay.
I wanted to make space for other things, basically, because I still thought the Bedlam Revelers were good. and I wanted to play Lava Spike, which a lot of people are not playing. So.
So what are the key matchups that you were considering when you were going into this event?
Well, I mean, I made a list of the 20 or so most played decks in Modern, and I just broke down like which ones I think are good and bad. I thought Spirits would be popular. It was very popular at the RPTQ in Seattle the week before. I thought Hardened Scales might show up. I thought Phoenix would show up. There'd be mirrors. I thought Tron would be popular. Yeah, just like
And
all sorts of decks.
which
It's
of those do
Modern.
you think are good for you?
I think most matchups out of the 20, I think I actually wrote it down. Let me just see. Basically most decks are good for me if they have any sort of slow board control strategy. All the creature decks are good matchups, I feel. Thing in the Ice is just completely destroys. I played against Boggles, and it was a close match because I kept a bad hand in game three. But you know, flipping thing in the Ice against Boggles, like what are they going to do?
Sure.
Affinity, how do they go for a Ravager kill when you have an active thing in the Ice? Stuff like that. So it's really good against Hardened Scales. So I'm good against all those decks. I think I'm not great, but fine against the non-interactive decks that are trying to kill you quickly. Because I also kill very quickly. So like a deck like Titan Shift, I think I'm just faster than them.
Yeah, that's a
And
matchup that I've played quite a bit. As that's my favorite deck, and I think that you're extremely favored because you're just like half a turn faster, and
yeah, I think I'm very favored on the play, and on the draw, it's probably kind of close.
yep, that's exactly what happened.
Yeah. There are decks, however, that are the same but reversed. Like I think Storm, for example, is slightly faster than me. It's really important to have a turn two thing in the ice in play and then flip it as soon as possible. So I did play against the GP. I did win. I think blue white is the nightmare matchup. If there's a lot of blue white or Jeskai in your metagame, then you should not play this deck. They have Terminus, Path to Exile, Rest in Peace in the sideboard. It's just timely reinforcements, maybe. The Jeskai deck has Lightning Helix. It's just I feel like blue white's basically unwinnable, and you can play. That's one of the reasons I didn't move to Crackling Drake. You can play that to try to beat Rest in Peace, but you're still not beating blue white. Tron, I felt was unfavored because of the main deck relics, but I've beaten it most times I've played it, so it's certainly winnable. I think that some people are playing Stony Silence in the sideboard, which is one of the things identified in the article as something you could try. What else is bad? I think Dredge is not great. Amulet is a little faster than you. Dredge is not great, by the way, the main reason being Crippling Chill. And that might be a weakness of my version specifically because, you know, Lava Spike looks pretty bad against Crippling Chill.
Sure. They just did kill four of the cards in your deck
Yeah,
as they just play their normal game plan.
but other than that, I mean, I pretty much like all my matchups. I think there are version like depending on the version you play, you could be weak to burn,
Sure.
but you could also, I mean, a turn two thing in the ace is gonna require a lot of resources for them to kill. So yeah, I think it's like favorite against like the other, you know, Death Shadow. What other decks are popular? Humans. Yeah, all these other decks.
Yeah, I would assume that creature decks are pretty bad against the Thing in the Ice deck. Like, I think that, outside, I mean, Reflector Mage obviously could be a beating, and the fact that you're playing Lava Spike could make your version worse against
Yeah.
humans, but I mean, it's not like Arc Like Phoenix can't block for a turn or two.
That's it. Arclight, like even the mono red version I was playing at first was still very good against the creature decks. Like you can trade off your Arclight Phoenix for a Mantis Rider and or whatever, and at some point, you know, you're just bringing them back and they don't really have like they can bounce it, but then you can discard it and bring it back. Yeah, it's quite good against those decks.
So, is there any sequencing tips that people should know about when they're trying to bring back their phoenixes, when they're trying to flip their guys? Is there anything that we should cover on that?
Yeah, okay. I guess the sequencing thing that I learned as I was testing the deck is you have to be very careful I think it's more a factor with my version because instead of playing more cantrips, I'm playing Lava Spike. So you have to be careful with your turn one, what you cast on turn one. And often if you have often your turn one, if you have a thing in the ice, you're just passing. You don't necessarily need to cast your Serum Visions or Faithless Looting to put your Phoenix in the graveyard. You can do all those things on turn three, and you want to be able to bring your Phoenix. You want to be able to flip your thing in the ice, ideally, the same turn that the Phoenixes are coming back, so that it won't bounce your Phoenix. Bedlam Reveler conveniently is a horror, so that you don't have to worry about that. But if you don't have a thing in the ice, it's important. A turn two thing in the ice is important in so many matchups that you often will be casting your Serum Visions or whatever on turn one. But yeah, making sure that you can't just take for granted that you can cast three spells in a turn if you just start casting your cantrips at any point in the game. You sometimes have to play for a slightly longer game, and you have to recognize when you can do that and when you can't.
That's actually what I learned this week playing that the different blue red decks, both the Dragon's deck and the other deck, is that you can't just waste your cantrips. You have to use them at opportune times. Even though I wasn't playing Phoenixes, then like those cantrips are in there a lot of the time for like your dragons in the standard deck. And I quickly learned that if you use them all, you just end up with a bunch of lands in your hand.
Yeah, it's especially I would say Metamorphose is a card. Like when you're bringing back a Phoenix already, it may be best to hold on to your Metamorphose so that you can rebuy or flip a thing in the ice that you draw later. Like those card, like Metamorphose is extremely important to be able to go off on one turn. So don't cast them just because they're in your hand necessarily.
So tomorrow, I let's say that I'm playing this deck tomorrow. How would you feel if I registered zero Bedlam Reveler, one Jace, and three Crackling Drake with your exact same 75?
Well, you need to fix the mana base, I would say, because you need more blue sources than I needed. And I was playing a list that, like, I cut the second island for a Bloodstained
You
Mire.
have four mountain, one island, instead of three island, two mountain. I see.
I don't know exactly what the mana base is for the Crackling Drake deck, but
That's the only
I was
difference. That's
with
just a.
Bedlam Reveler, you and Fiery Temper as well. I often wanted three or four red sources in play.
Sure.
So I would only get the island in a situation where I'm basically planning to cast Blood Moon at some point.
Awesome.
Yeah, and I think like Crackling, I probably wouldn't play Jace. I think I would just play more cantrips. I like what Richard Tan did. He just jammed all the one mana cantrips into his deck. Sleight of hand. He had some ops. I don't even know what else he had. The reason that's good is because the way the metagame is shaping up, there's enough decks where you need to kill them as fast as possible and nothing else matters. And being able to find a thing in the ice for turn two is extremely important. So
So sleight of
I
hand,
might.
being able to look at an extra card over and op looking at an extra card is pretty valuable.
Yeah, well, I mean, I wouldn't be cutting other cantrips. I'd be cutting like Bedlam Revelers or whatever. So or even Lava Spike, which I do think is good. I think Charter Course is a vulnerable card. I don't know if I would play that. And I don't know if I would play four Fiery Temper. That Fiery Temper is what, besides Bedlam Reveler, Fiery Temper is the next worst card in the deck.
Okay. Should we go on to listener questions? Anything you want to add
Sure.
before we do that?
No, let's do it.
Cool. The first one we have is, do you feel like you have enough enablers? Too many or the right amount?
What do you think he means by enabler?
I would assume that enabler is the Thought Scour, Chart a Course kind of stuff.
Okay, so enabler as in like, so there's three things you want to enable in the deck. There's getting cards into your graveyard in general. There's finding the Arclight Phoenixes. There's discard outlets, and there's also just being able to cast three spells in a turn. I guess there's a lot of cards like Thought Scour that does all of those things. Faithless Looting is the best one. I would say, and this is why I felt the Bedlam Reveler was not very good for me, that the deck basically never runs out of cards. I don't think I was ever empty-handed except for that one time I cast Bedlam Reveler, drew three lands, and died. Now, when I was testing, I didn't play against Black Green at all in the tournament. It was still present. I think it lost the finals, if I'm not mistaken. And I think Logan Nettles was probably playing a Jund deck or something. He did well. So against those decks where they have Liliana, Inquisitions, or Death Shadow decks, you definitely can run out of cards. And in which case, maybe you want more enablers. But what I was finding is that I never ran out. I never had trouble bringing back a Phoenix or flipping a thing in the ice. So I felt like there was enough, which was why I was able to play Lava Spike, for example.
All right. The next question that we have is, what made you go to the hybrid mono red to UR? What advantages do you think that this version has? I think that this is specifically playing Bedlam Reveler, right?
Well, it's interesting that this my deck is being called a hybrid. I guess it's a hybrid between the mono red and the Crackling Drake decks. But I started playing the blue red deck before Crackling Drake was a thing. And there were some blue red lists, and my deck looks fairly similar to those. I made some changes, but I feel like I'm just a blue red deck. But okay, the reason to go to blue red instead of playing the mono, like when I played the mono red deck for 2 leagues, went 10-0. And I was like, this deck is insane. I'm killing people so fast, they can't do anything. Even Runaway Steamkin was extremely powerful. You can go Steamkin, you start casting Bedlam Revelers, you chain like 4 spells in a turn. But the danger is 2 things with the mono red deck. One, if they have Graveyard Hate, you don't have a lot you can do. Your Bedlam Revelers are bad and your Arclight Phoenixes are bad. Steamkin is fine, but it's not going to win the game on its own if you're not cascading spells. And the other thing is, you're a deck that has a very low number of permanent threats, and you run the risk of them just having like fatal pushes for your Steamkins and a way of stopping your Phoenixes, and then you just have nothing. Or you can get your threats surgical. The blue-red version is much, even though it has the same number of creatures, it's much better at finding them. And it's much more resilient to Graveyard Hate. There are probably some questions later about Graveyard Hate. Do you know if there are?
Yeah, I believe there are. One of the things that has happened, kind of looking at, if we look at the mono red list recently, you know, it's just 4 Arclight, 4 Bedlam Reveler, 4 Swift Spear, and then, you know, gut shots, stuff like, you know, just more burn and a maximum velocity or two. So, the list that took a second at the SCG had 2 risk factors, fun fact.
I actually had that in my mono red list, and it was just okay. It was good against the black green decks and stuff like that. But
Did you try the hollowed one version at all?
No, I just thought about what kind of things I wanted to do. Like I thought about playing Burning Inquiry in the deck, and I decided that one of the reasons Arclight Phoenix is so good and why I think Swift Spear is not very good, and kind of extends to hollow one, is like the evasion is really important. People are used to throwing something in front of things, and very few decks can put up chump blockers for Arclight Phoenix.
I mean, especially when let's be clear about Thing in the Ice. It has pseudo evasion, right? It clears the board and then gets in. So it's not like it's not evasive also. And then when you combine the two, and if I'm not mistaken, you can even the trigger stack, right? So, or not, didn't even need a stack, right? Because you just flip it and then at combat, the Phoenix comes back and you attack with both.
So, you flip it main phase one, basically, and you're fine.
So I think that people might miss that key interaction a little bit. So I think Thing in the Ice is a good reason to play blue red. As somebody who's played against this deck a lot now by testing against my friends, like
nobody who picks up the blue red version would ever want to play mono red, I would say, because the Thing in the Ice is just so good in so many matchups. Yeah. Even if you bounce your Arclight Phoenix, if you hit for 7, like you can cast your Phoenix for 4. It happens fairly often. You can reanimate it pretty easily. And they still have to deal with a 7-8. You know, it's not that easy to do.
So how did the next question is, how did John land on the cantrips or card draw for this build of Arclight? We kind of talked about this a little bit, but you ranked them number... I mean, technically you ranked Manamorphos number 1, but I don't know that that's what I would consider like a cantrip. I think that's just a key card in the deck. So you have them Faithless Looting, Serum Visions, then Thought Scour?
I even have Faithless Looting ahead of Manamorphos. Like, Manamorphos is important, and it's important to consider when not to cast it. But Faithless Looting is completely broken in the deck and in a lot of other decks. It's one of the best cards in Modern. Let me just pull up the list so I don't miss one. Faithless Looting, number one.
Then Metamorphose, I would assume.
Yeah, if you're considering it sure. A cantrip. Terra Visions is number two. I don't think there's anything close in the format to those two. Then after that, I have Charter Course and Thought Scours. I think that because of how important turn two thing the ace is, I would want to play some sleight of hand. That would be the next card I add. And I might add those, like I was saying, I might add those before I add third and fourth Thought Scour. Probably, I think Chart of Course, also because of how I think Fiery Temper is not very good. I don't know, like you're really with the deck like this, like if you expect a lot of black green, you're going to build a very different version than if you don't. And I dodged black, I think it's a good matchup. I didn't play against it. So my impression after the tournament is Bedlam's bad. Chart of Course is not great. It's still good. Chart of Course is still good. And it's a huge improvement over Tormenting Voice, which is another reason to move to blue-red.
So I think that one of the reasons that you got this question so much, by the way, I'm a huge podcast listener. I listen to so many podcasts. And the day, like right before this tournament, so there are two Magic podcasts that have, for competitive Magic, that just have a different level of listeners than the rest of them, and that's Game and Limited Resources. And Game did a podcast where they talked about this deck, and they just like poo-pooed all over any deck list that didn't play Four Thought Scour. They kind of went off about it. So it was really funny that immediately after that episode is posted, you do well, and like it's just everyone's like talking about your deck, and I was like, it's so funny because like when you hit 10,000 listeners for a competitive Magic podcast, you're hitting a significant portion of the competitive Magic scene. Because there's 20 million Magic players, there's not 20 million competitive Magic players. So it was really funny to me to see the reactions to your deck, and I think a large part of that does come from, you know, the opinions of one Jerry Thompson, who did not like Thought Scour. And it's really interesting to hear you talk about Sleight of Hand, and to hear that, you know, some of the success that happened was playing more cantrips that looked for your thing in the ice rather than things that put your arc like into your graveyard.
So is he saying that you should play zero or four or just anything but two?
Said that he would start with four and he would never cut one.
Yeah. So I went through this is a new deck, first of all. I don't think my version is perfect.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll have a perfect version for a little while still. And it might change depending on the metagame. So when I start testing a new deck, I almost always will play the exact version that I see. I don't like to bias based on theory until I've like at least seen what the deck does. And, you know, for example, the deck I started with had some Swift Spears or it had some Gut Shots, and those are cards I'm like, these cards do not belong in this deck. I cut them. Thought Scour was a card that was always okay. I started on two because that's what the list had. I felt times that it was good and I wanted more. I never felt this card is bad, I want zero. But I also started boarding them out against decks with, you know, three Rest in Peace or four Late Island Void. And I'm like, well, I'm boarding them out. I'm also cutting Bedlam Revelers. I don't have enough cards that I can board in, you know, eight cards for all these matchups. So like two started to really make sense to me for that reason. And you know, I didn't listen to Jerry's podcast. Like he probably has some valid points about it. Definitely looking at the deck, you're like, why are you playing two of a card you always want?
Well, but to be fair, the deck that top eighted also was not playing Four Thought Scour.
Okay. How many did he have?
So the package that Tan was playing was four Faithless Looting, two Opt, four Serum Vision, three Sleight of Hand, three Thought Scour, four Metamorphose. So he was not playing Chart of Course, and which makes sense. I mean, that's what you said. I think that there are no sacred cows in a new deck, in my opinion. Like, I think that one of the biggest things that you can learn in Magic is that you need to have a plan and you need to know why you're making decisions. And the fact that you know why you're making decisions is far more honestly, it's more important than the decisions that you make a lot of the time in a situation like this, because what's like you're like if you have this sacred cow in this deck that's 2 months old, it's like, but why like you need to give me a reason other than I think this, therefore it must be true, because I mean, I don't know about you, John, but I'm wrong all the effing time.
Yeah, I think that one of the sort of like level up moments for me was when I just decided that I'm going to be willing to be wrong. And this comes up a lot, both in testing on a team for Pro Tours and in, I think, in the world of content, where people state an opinion with extreme dedication, like they're very strong in their opinions. Because and that's a valuable thing, because if people are like, yeah, maybe this, maybe that, then nobody believes them and they have to retest it. So when you feel confident, you want to sit, be confident. But that also tends to lead to hyperbole, where people are like, this card is terrible, this card is great.
Sure.
And I think like one of the things I do after a tournament, or try to do, and one of the things I want to keep doing, is have a bit of like a personal retrospective, where I'm like, all right, like these are the things that I did. This is work, this worked, this didn't work. And one of the things that I noted about this tournament, so I had a lot of success online. I five trophies in 8 leagues with a new deck in Modern is kind of unheard of, I think. It's incredibly good. But people were asking me about the deck, and I was like, I've been doing great, try it. And they were reporting back to me, yeah, I'm off it, the deck sucks. I went 1-4, whatever. A lot of people, like, you know, five or six people that are good players. So I'm like, I had my doubts. I played it at GP Atlanta, which was the week before the PT. So it was a tournament that I was mailing in a little bit. I did not really test for it. I had played some Phoenix before. I played an early version of Blue Red. I went 2-3, lost a close match to Amulet for day two. And yeah, I did badly at that tournament. People were reporting it's bad, but I was like, no, I've been doing well. But it's not just I'm doing well. I think the deck is really powerful, really well positioned, and has a lot of good matchups. And it's hard to disrupt. And I just decided to stick to my guns. I'm like, I don't care if people think it's bad. I think it's good. I'm going to play it. And, you know, that also extends to card decisions. And like, people can tell me Swift Spear is great, and I'm like, I play with Swift Spear. I think it's bad. I'm not going to play it. People want to play Four Thought Scour. I'm like, well, I think you're vulnerable post sideboard, and maybe less so if you cut the Bedlam Revelers, but because then you don't have as many cards to board out. But then you don't need Thought Scour as much, because it's actually not that difficult to find Phoenixes. So
Sure.
yeah, there's, you know, like you said, there's no sacred cow, and you have to be willing to trust your instincts.
We kind of already answered a couple of these questions, so I'm going to move on to thoughts that you can change moving forward to fight Grixis Death Shadow. Would a tempo play like Vapor Snack be a strategy? I would actually assume that you're pretty good against the Death Shadow decks.
My record against Death Shadow is undefeated, but that's probably like 3 matches. I think it's a good matchup. So one of the problems that Burn has against Death Shadow, and I've tested the Burn Death Shadow matchup from both sides, I think it's very skill dependent. And I think, which is weird for a Burn deck, is that it's harder to play from the Burn player's side than the Death Shadow side, which is usually the opposite.
Well,
Usually the Burn side is
I think that
weaker.
Death Shadow plays a very similar game every game, so that it would make sense to me that it would be harder from the other side.
Well, Death Shadow does play a similar game, but I think Death Shadow in general is a very hard deck to play,
Sure.
or at least to play perfectly. But in that matchup specifically, I think it's kind of flipped, because you can't just unload Burn, but you also can't always just save Burn, because they tear apart your hand with like Inquisitions, Liliana, stuff like that. So what this deck has as an advantage over the Burn deck is, if you exhaust their removal spells with, and they don't have that many removal spells, and you can redraw, like you can draw more and more thing in the ice because you have so many cantrips, that they can't kill you with a Temur Battle Rage, or, you know, just getting that one attack in. And you can set up a really big turn where you're doing like, you know, bring back three Phoenixes at some point and just killing them outright. I think it's already a good matchup. I would lean away from Vapor Snag, because I think you're already good at that kind of effect with Thing in the Ice. And I guess if you, the thing I would want, if I was like worried specifically about facing a lot of Death Shadow, the first thing I would do is play one or two lava, Lightning Axe main, because that's also really good in the mirror game one. It's good against like Tarmogoyf decks. It's good against spirits. It's a card I don't want to go too deep on because it's completely dead in some matchups.
So this was a two of in Tam's deck, and it actually is the next question that we have, by the
okay.
way.
Okay, let's hear the next question.
Yeah, it is, you know, the deck seems to struggle with creatures with toughness three or greater, or with toughness greater than three. What is the best way beyond Lightning Axe to do this? So you are saying, though, that you don't hate the idea of one or two Lightning Axe main.
I think because I'm specifically down on Bedlam Reveler, Fiery Temper, and Charter Course. Charter Course less so, because I still think Charter Course is good, but if I'm cutting Fiery Temper and Bedlam Reveler, I want it a bit less, then I think making space for one or two Lightning Axe is reasonable. Okay, so I disagree with the premise of this question. I don't think that the deck struggles against creatures with toughness greater than three. I think creatures with toughness greater than three are generally slow, and this deck excels against those kind of decks. But actually killing a creature with toughness greater than three could be difficult. If I find that that's a specific problem, the first thing I want to do is Lightning Axe. The other options, I think, do they ask what would you do beyond adding Lightning Axe? The next cards you could consider, I think, are Dismember and probably sideboard Flame Slash would be an option.
You like Flame Slash over Roast?
Well, what has five toughness that you want to kill?
Gurmag Angler is probably it.
Okay, I mean, yeah, I guess I'm just not at all scared of a Gurmag Angler because
You have a Bedlam Reveler, or you have a, I mean, that's I agree with what you said, by the way. I think that when you are playing a Thing in the Ice deck, large creatures are not the thing that you're worried about.
Yeah, even Bedlam Reveler, even if they kill your Thing in the Ice, you can block it with Phoenix and then just kill them with burn spells and evasion. Like, I don't think you're weak to this strategy, so I'm not looking for ways to shore it up. But if, you know, it turns out that, like, I haven't tested each match. There's so many decks in Modern. I haven't tested each one, you know, 20 matches. I've played probably 100 games or 100 matches maybe with the deck. So I've played Death Shadow three times. You know, maybe there is some weakness there. Maybe I'm misreading the matchup. So I think that Lightning Axe is the first thing I would do. Dismember is the second. I doubt I would ever go as far as Flame Slash, but Flame Slash would be good in the mirror against Crackling Drake and Thing in the Ice.
And we've already established that that might be something you want to try. So if we think that Crackling Drake is good, then...
Yeah, and I do think Crackling Drake, whether it's good in general, is good in the mirror. It's specifically another interaction that came up in the tournament that, you know, I had to pause and say, oh, was onboarding in Surgicals because of how good they were in my testing. Well, I Surgicaled my opponent's Serum Visions on turn two or three to bring back Phoenix, and then his Crackling Drake had plus four power. So something to consider.
We've kind of answered the next question, and so I'd like to add a question of my own. As I'm looking at this, I'm just going to tell you my thoughts, and this is me theory crafting on the fly. I've played zero. That's not true. I've played games with this deck as the villain a couple of times, but I haven't played that much. So I am considering, John, taking your deck, cutting Fiery Temper, and cutting Lava Spike, and adding one Gut Shot, some number of Sleight of Hands, cutting the Bedlam Revelers, adding Jace, three Crackling Drake, changing the mana base. And just trying that out with maybe two Lightning Axes. Is that close? I mean, from our conversation, that seems close to what you're thinking as well. Why don't you talk about that?
Well, that's basically Richard Tan's deck list, right?
No, because I want to keep the Charter Courses because I think they're good.
Okay.
He played a lot of different effects. So Richard played one Fiery Temper. He played two Lightning Axe. He played three Gutshot, which seems like a lot to me. I'm wrong. Maybe I should start with Richard Tan's list and then see what I think. But I personally, playing against the Stack Charter Course was very interesting to me and very powerful.
Yeah.
So
it's a good card for sure. I really disliked Gutshot. I know some people are high on it. I think it's a horrible card in 75% of your matchups. I don't think it's impactful enough when it's good. Like, I just... Bolt, the one mana, one toughness creature is fine. But I guess where I would start, is that what you're asking, where I would start?
Yeah, no, well, you've already answered one of my questions, which is, you know, what your thought about Gutshot. It was more like, if I went through a league with this, would you? The other card that I wanted to try was Maximum Velocity. Once I had,
Yeah, that card's interesting to me as a one of potentially. The
yeah,
deck's really good at finding one of. So that is that's a reason why a version like Richards, which has like a mix of spells, can be good, because you can find your one ofs fair or two ofs. Like, you'll hit that. You don't really want to draw four Fiery Temper, but maybe the first one is great.
sure.
You cast it for free off Faithless Looting or Charter Course. There's no reason you have to play four of everything. I would try. I think Sleight of Hand is the card I want to put in the deck. I'm not sure about Crackling Drake. So one of the things I would say, which is, so the last question was about Graveyard Hate, right?
It was. I felt like we covered it, but you're welcome to dive in.
I would just add that the Crackling Drakes are good against Graveyard Hate. I have an extremely good record against people who resolve a Rest in Peace or Leyline of the Void against me with the blue-red deck that I played. And that's one of the reasons we didn't really talk about Lava Spike too much, but one of the reasons I wanted Lava Spike is because when they're able to neutralize your creatures with a Surgical Extraction or a Leyline of the Void to dig out Bedlam Revelers, you are still a burn deck that's capable of burning them out, but you need to have enough burn to be able to do that. And you're often in a spot where you're like, I need to draw another burn spell. And Lava Spike's just extremely efficient, and a one mana spell that lets you bring back Phoenix. I think Crackling Drake's a reasonable card to include. I think it's slow and bad in a number of matchups. So you could, but I think when you're playing a new deck like this, you should try as many new different things as you can.
Sure.
Like, it's not obvious looking at the list that Swift Spear is bad. I tried Rift Bolt. Rift Bolt looks like it would fit in really well because you can set it up the turn before, and then you get basically a free spell that helps you flip Thing in the Ice or bring back Phoenix. But in practice, you're mana using your mana basically every turn. It's kind of hard to know when you're going to go off with Thing in the Ice, and you don't have the mana to invest. And then all of a sudden, you have a card that you cannot cast the turn that you need to cast spells.
Sure.
So I thought Rift Bolt was terrible, worse than Swift Spear. But yeah, you should try. Like, I think trying Crackling Drake version is perfectly fine, and you'll start to see the weaknesses of the card and its strengths. And I think it's really good in the mirror. And it's just a good card in the mid-range matchups. But I don't know if it's where I want to be in a deck that's going to kill me turn three or four. But
Awesome. Well,
yeah.
we went over this deck a lot, and I'm really happy. This is what people have been clamoring for. This is what they asked for. So I hope this was helpful. I think we covered Tan's deck. I think we covered your deck. We covered, cards that weren't in either deck. So I hope it's super helpful for the listeners.
I think there's also, I would just say there's some room to maneuver in the sideboard as well. I don't think the sideboard is set in stone. So yeah, feel free to like experiment and try some different things. I don't think the list is where it is. It's a really fun deck to play. And you can get a lot of games in because the games don't take very long in most cases.
So,
Round nine accepted.
sure. So, John, we are 40% to our Patreon goal, I'm pretty sure, of when we get new tokens made.
Okay.
I have decided that I will get a new token made, and I will figure out what I want to be. But your goal this week was to decide.
Yeah. Okay, so I have thought about it. I know what I want. I'm worried that it's not going to be played. I want to be a mirror token. I think they're really cool. But I don't know when we'll see mirror in standard. Probably not for a long time.
What
My
makes
other
mirror
thought,
in what makes mirror in modern?
basically not that much.
It's just
I
the
like
ball
them.
of mirror, right? That makes the
Yeah. Well, I mean, so they're played in the KCI deck, not the mirror tokens, but mirror in general. And I think it's
Sure.
a, I like the, and there were mirror tokens, you know, with Mirror Smith and stuff like that in Murad and when it was in standard. So maybe that the other one is my default probably would be Thopter. There's lots of things that make Thopters now. I think they're cool too. So yeah, some artifact-based creature, I think.
We got constructs and Thopters. You guys like your colorless stuff too much.
Well, I mean, artifacts are great.
To be fair, Michael was a goat for what it's worth.
Oh, that's a nice one.
I was a dragon, because Sarkhan Unbroken is my favorite, like one of my favorite cards of all time. Manny was a knight from Gideon at the time, and Casey was the monastery Swissphere token or monastery mentor token. So
yeah, I mean, there's elementals too. Those are nice. Those are played in modern.
That's what Quentin was gonna be. So
yeah,
there's good tokens. You got a lot to pick from, but so I do like the Thopter one.
We need like a viewer, like a Patreon poll or something.
There we go. Pick yeah. John's token so that he doesn't I'll have to. I'll come up
with some choices. Well, those are all ones that I like. I mean, I could be like a whatever the Dragon Egg token or something, but or the Rekindling Phoenix token. Ooh, wait, the Rekindling, cool. Is that elemental? Is that?
I have no idea what it would be.
It's a 01, so I don't know if it would be an elemental.
I don't know. Wait, right, I can look it up.
Yeah, I mean, it's really important.
Do you want to be an 01? Is that?
I want to be a Rekindling Phoenix.
I mean, that's the card's great, so that makes sense. It does, in fact, at the beginning of your upkeep, so it creates a 01 red elemental.
Oh, so those are different than the 1/1 elementals. So, okay.
That's tough because you can't be both. You can't.
Well, people, I can just.
You could. I actually, technically, we're making the tokens. They can look however you want. We could make it say 01 or 1/1, so that you could get the twofer.
Are there any non-red elementals tokens?
I'm sure there's.
What does Master of Waves make?
1/0 elementals.
All right. Well, I mean, we have some options here. Maybe elemental.
All right. Well, wait. Does he make 1/1s? I might have just said something. I don't know. You can find me on Twitter at Spencer H. You can find John at JohnSternMTL. Is that going to be changed to Van, or are you in Vancouver?
I'm in Victoria, Vancouver. It's on Vancouver Island. Yeah, I guess I could just make it JohnSternMTG. That would probably be the easiest, right?
You do what you want, man. You do what you want. You can find the podcast at CCMTG. You can find us every week on anywhere that you listen to podcasts. One of the things that I would request of people, that one of the number one things that we always get asked is, how can I support the show? I can't do Patreon. And there's so many ways to support the show. One of them is just sharing the podcast with your friends, letting them know about it. That's super helpful. That's a great way to support the show. If you want to just like represent the show, you can go to the swag store at constructivecriticism.com. The swag is as cheap as it could possibly be. I think we get like $1 for everything in the swag store. So, you know, we're trying to make it affordable for you and give us a little bit of a kickback. So check that out at constructivecriticism.com and click on swag. You can join the conversation on Facebook and the Constructive Criticism family. If you're a patron of $12 or more, you get access to the Constructive Critics group. You can also join the Discord. You know, we got that contest going right now. We've got people talking about Modern, Standard, Legacy. There's lots of Magic content in that Discord, even though it's an interculture Discord. So thank you so much, John, for going over this deck. I know that it's something you played a lot. I mean, playing 100 matches in a couple months is you know, that's a lot. It's a lot of dedication. So we really appreciate you giving the listeners your thoughts on this deck. And while you know, you're gold for one more cycle, and I think that we're going to see you do well in the next cycle. I think that you know, you're one of my favorite players to watch, and I'm really excited to see you continue to succeed.
Well, I still have a shot for gold this season, so we'll see.
Oh, does this Pro Tour count towards that?
This I have a full quarter, so I need to get, because I did well in quarter two at the PT playing Burn in Modern. Okay. I think I went X4 or something like that. So I'm losing 16 points, so I need to make up 17. Assuming that gold still exists, we don't know anything. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. You could just go get Arena and then be a top 32 player on Arena, and then your whole world changes.
Yeah, I installed it, and I put the Game Awards code into my account. I don't know what that did. Maybe I have some booster packs.
You have 1 Vraska's Contempt. You have 4...
I have a lot of Contempt. Maybe it's not all Vraska's.
So yeah, you got 4 Eldest Reborn, 4 Merfolk Branchwalker, 4 something else, 1 Contempt, 1... You got a bunch of rares and a bunch of commons to help your collection.
Okay. Cool. Also, I just said, if you want, I'll give you the link to the Master Up article. Basically, yeah, I just broke down my first 8 leagues and kind of the cards I tried and my reasons for, you know, giving up on some cards or adding some cards, so people can take a look if they're interested.
Awesome. Thank you, everybody, so much for listening, and we'll see you guys all next week for another episode of Constructive Criticism.
All right. Thank you.
magic, 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 magic.